I got to tell this story to my kids this week during the fair. There's a family in Fayette County that I'm very close to. They were really like a second family, kind of, I guess, like extended family. They would be my aunt's family, my aunt through marriage. Did a lot of stuff. That's how I got my start in livestock. But I remember in particular, one of their sons' name is Kyle. He's a few years older than me. He's a great guy. Rough on the exterior, heart of gold. But I was having some conflict, and it was probably around junior high time, some conflict. I don't remember exactly what the conflict was, but I remember how I thought I needed to resolve the conflict. So I was out on the farm one day with Kyle, and I told him, I said, hey, I need to learn how to fight. And he said, why? I said, well, there's some stuff going on at school, and I need to take care of it. And he turns around and walks off. And I thought, well, that didn't go over so well. We were going about our business, doing the chores, and I don't know, it was probably 20 minutes later, I had my back turned, I was filling up water, and I just feel somebody jump on top of me and start waylaying, just going to town. And I said, what are you doing? He said, you need to learn how to fight, right? So, yeah. Conflict is something that we cannot escape in this life, but this is what Max Lucado said. Conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Unfortunately, I don't feel like that we get very good examples from our culture on how to handle conflict. I'll be honest with you. The people that are most often put in front of our faces as people we are supposed to follow and look up to, people who are probably deemed leaders of this country, often take a combative approach to conflict. But we're going to wrap up this series in Proverbs this morning, taking a look at Proverbs' wisdom for conflict. So I've written all the verses that we're going to cover behind me. Hopefully you can see around me, and as I move around, you can jot them down. I don't know if Tyler got them in there too. So Tyler's got them in the system. You have your YouVersion Bible event. You can follow along. But I want to start with Proverbs chapter 20, verse 3, because it says this. It is to one's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. And probably the big picture idea that I want you to take away with you, and probably something that I've come to learn the hard way in life, is that how we handle conflict reveals a lot about our character. How we handle conflict reveals a lot about our character. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of times in my life that conflict has revealed parts of my character that I would say were not congruent with the character of Christ. But as I've grown and matured, I feel like I've learned that how we navigate through conflict is a necessary part of our sanctification. So if I'm using big words, sanctification, it just means becoming more like Christ, growing to be more like Christ. And if we want to be more like Jesus, then unfortunately, we have to suffer, because part of Jesus' life was suffering and conflict. And conflict is just one of those ways that we have to suffer. So conflict is interesting because it can also become the very tool that God uses to refine us. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to take a look at some statements that are known to be, this is going to really resonate with Shannon, I hope. I always try to throw things in here sometimes that Shannon will just say, ah. We're going to look at several antithetical parallelisms. Okay? Big words. Antithetical parallelisms. And for some of you that aren't literature teachers, you're like, I really don't know what that is and I don't care. But essentially what an antithetical parallelism is, when you have a sentence with two lines and the second line contrasts the first line. And Grace was singing at our table this weekend, conjunction, junction, what's your function? So we were, you know, learning about conjunctions, like the word but is a conjunction. And in these antithetical parallelisms, right, that's the defining mark between the first line and the second line. It's the word but. So these kind of statements teach us some important things about conflict. What these statements do, as I look through these, and there's a lot, and I didn't know if I could include them all. I may not get them all in today. But essentially what you get in these statements, you get a source and you get a solution. in the statement. You get a source of the conflict, and you get a solution to help you walk through the conflict. That's the contrast. It's really a contrast of the characteristics that we display in our lives. So the first one we're going to look at together is Proverbs 10, verse 12. Proverbs 10, verse 12 says, "Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers all wrongs." And this is the one I'm going to spend the most time on this morning, because this is the one that took me down so many rabbit holes. And I think this is why I put it first, because I think it kind of lays the foundation for the rest of it. It flowed naturally from this. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers all wrongs. So the source of conflict in this statement would be hatred. Now, hatred is the word the translators have chosen to interpret the Hebrew word sinah. And this is a very interesting word in the Hebrew language. And I think the way that the Hebrew language conveys this word is probably a little bit different to how we English-speaking people understand hatred. So if you think about hatred or hate, you know, according to Merriam-Webster, it's to feel intense or passionate dislike for someone. But the Hebrew word really relates more to hurt associated with avoidance, rejection, or denial. And what's fascinating is the Hebrew alphabet was developed from a form of writing that used pictures to communicate a word or an idea. This is known as pictography or pictograph. And so this Hebrew word that we translate as hate was communicated originally by a picture of a seed followed by the picture of a thorn, according to the ancient Hebrew lexicon of the Bible. So the idea is that the thorn of a plant would cause someone to turn or away or avoid that plant or that seed. And in the ancient world, we know that when people set up a camp or a tent, they would find these thorny plants and they would weave them together and make a hedge to surround their dwelling place to provide protection, because that would turn predators away. And so when we think about that and try to push hatred out of our mind and understand really what the Hebrew people were talking about, I think it relates more to intentionally avoiding or rejecting a person. And when we do that, when we avoid a person, avoid a group, it's a guaranteed way to stir up conflict. Now, here's the reason I really followed this rabbit hole, this trail, because I kept coming back to the story of Jacob and Esau I've hated. And that's always a contention point for people. How can God say, "I have hated"? Well, when you think about this, it's not that God hated, had a passionate dislike of Esau. It's that God turned away from Esau. And a lot of commentators will tell you God turned away because Esau despised what God had given him, his birthright. And so when we think about that and think about hatred is the source that stirs up conflict, when we turn our back toward people, when we avoid them, reject them, it's a guaranteed way to enter into a conflict. Now, the good news is we get that "but" in there, but love covers all wrongs. And this is the contrasting piece to hatred in the verse. Now, there are a lot of Hebrew words that we translate as love in English. Just like when you get into the New Testament, there's a lot of Greek words that we translate into one word, love. But interestingly, this word, love, in Hebrew is the word that's most commonly used, and it doesn't just communicate a feeling, but it really kind of takes feeling and translates that feeling into an action that is expressed toward another person. And so the solution is love in action. And this is the contrast to avoiding that person, rejecting that person. It's drawing near to a person. Distance from a person or a group of people creates conflict, but when we draw near to people or to a certain group, it alleviates tension. And I really think this is challenging, because when I think about how we naturally respond to conflict, the natural response is to withdraw. If we take it one step further and look at not just our lives individually, but think of how the church typically addresses conflict within its culture, the church withdraws. And that escalates the tension and the conflict that the church has with the culture. But this proverb teaches us that loving by drawing near is the remedy for further conflict. I think our own relationship with God is a perfect example of how this proverb works itself out. This is a pattern that we see established with God's relationship with humanity all the way back in creation. Adam and Eve sin, and this initiates a conflict. And think about their response. When they realize we've messed up, we're naked, what do? They withdraw. They turn away. They hide. They avoid God. God, on the other hand, what does he do? He draws near. He walks to the garden and he asks them questions. When we sin, when we're in conflict with God, our natural reaction is to, I got to get away from him. I got to hide. I got to run. But God seeks us out. He draws near to us to bring reconciliation to the conflict. This is what Paul says about it in Romans chapter 5, verse 8. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. See, in that conflict of sin, Jesus drew near. He came. And you think about the interactions that Jesus had with people. It was the people that the culture shunned and pushed away. They hated, in other words. The tax collectors, the sinners, the harlots. And Jesus drew near to those people to resolve the conflict that they had with God. Here's a second statement. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 10. Where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Again, we get a source of the conflict and a solution to walk through conflict. The source in this case, we translate as pride. It's really not the word that communicates arrogance or thinking highly of yourself. It's more about insolence. And the best way to describe insolence is having little regard for the thoughts or the input from others. It's a little bit different than arrogance, like being puffed up, but you really just don't care what other people have to say. That's what this is communicating. When I think back to my teenage years, I learned a lot about, I can reflect now and think, wow, this proverb really is true, you know. And I have the honor of having both of my parents here attend this church, and so sometimes it's like, do I say this, do I not say this? But there were times like they gave me advice, and I thought, nah, that's dumb, you know. I didn't want to take it. And what happened was, often, it led to conflict. Conflict with them, conflict with other interactions that I had. And so what happens is this little like, oh, I know better than you, seems small, but it turns into a full-blown conflict. Misunderstandings turn into full-blown conflicts. And really what we have to understand is there's differing perspectives when it comes to misunderstandings. But if one party refuses to hear the perspective of the other, the conflict grows. That's the way it works. And so we get the solution where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom, listen, this is the path of the wise. It's found in what? Those who take advice. Those who are open and have a willingness to listen, especially to take advice from people who are older and wiser than them. If I think to a biblical example of this kind of form of insolence, I think about Solomon's son, Rehoboam. So if you're not familiar with Bible history, Solomon was the son of David, became king. He had a son that became king. His name was Rehoboam. So Rehoboam succeeded Solomon, and it seems like, when you read his story, it seems like he's starting down the path of wisdom, because we're told that some people come to him, one of the people in particular, Jeroboam, says, hey, we are really concerned about the amount of labor that your father forced on us. We would like for you to reduce the labor. And so it seems like Rehoboam is like, okay, I'm going to go talk to some elders about this. I'm going to get some advice. So it sounds like, wow, he's doing what he needs to do. So he goes and He asks the elders for advice, and the elders say, well, here's a simple solution. You need to reduce their labor, and if you reduce their labor, you're going to find favor with the people. Now, the problem is, it doesn't seem like Rehoboam likes this advice. So it sounds like it. He gives the impression that he wants to hear what other people has to say, smarter people, but he really doesn't. So he goes to his friends, people that are his peers. He says, hey, here's what the complaint is. Here's what the elder said. And then his advice from his friends is a lot different. They say, this is what you need to tell those people. My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Now, whereas my father laid on a heavy yoke, I'm going to add to your yoke. Now, can you guess what happened next? Major conflict. Conflict marked the rest of Rehoboam's reign in Israel. I can tell you from personal experience that when we seek older, wiser counsel, and when we're open to the advice that they have, in almost every situation, the advice that I've gotten from older, wiser people helps to smooth over conflict every time. So the source of conflict is having a closed mind, not listening to what people have to say. The solution to help us walk through it is openness, being willing to listen to different perspectives. Here's the next statement. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 18. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but one who is patient calms a quarrel. This is a very fascinating verse, because the words for hot-tempered and patient, both literally, they relate to a person's nose. Okay? Seriously. In Hebrew, it's about a nose. And so a person with a short fuse or a hot temper was called a person that was short of nose. And a person who is known as patient or long-suffering was known as a person long of nose. So it's not like Pinocchio. You want a long nose. A long nose means you're more patient. And it all relates to, you know, sometimes you get so angry you snort. That's where this comes from. That language comes from the snorting anger. And a person who snorts fast, has a short nose, they're hot-tempered. But that person with a long nose, it takes that anger longer to get to the source for them to snort. And so the conflict here, what is guaranteed to cause conflict in life? An uncontrolled temper. A person with a short fuse. Now, I talked to you, a couple of you outside of, you know, at sporting events this week, at other places this week, and I told you I'm wrapping up the series today because I'm tired of living the events of this in my own life. I personally have a lot of experience with some of these things. An uncontrolled temper, a hot temper, man, listen, I can speak to that personally. Some of you are probably like, well, really? We haven't seen that. Well, thankfully, God's worked a lot. Barbara's probably helped me with that a lot. But there was a time, man, when my fuse was so short, and I'm gonna tell myself, and this is really bad. We hadn't been married very long, okay? And we were attending Centerville Christian Church. And there's two examples of this, a negative one and a positive one. I'll do the negative one first. We were coming home from Centerville Christian Church. We got a flat tire. It was a rainy day. It had rained several days, and so I pulled off to the side of the road, and every time I would get that car jacked up to change, put the spare on there, because it was so muddy, it would sink and fall. Did this several times. And Jeff, you've heard me tell this at Emmaus Walk. Yeah, I had the tire iron in my hand, ready to let go on the car. And it was in that moment, like this is when God brought to my attention the problem with the hot temper. It was in that moment that I actually felt like inside there somewhere a little whisper say, does this action reflect the Christ that is in you? And I didn't hit the car. So when we explode, it does damage. Conflict will ensue. Now, the solution is not that you never get angry. Notice that. The solution is that you're slow to anger. It takes longer to get to that point of eruption. And this is how God is most often described in the Old Testament, that he's slow to anger. This is how he described himself to Moses. And then from that point on in Scripture, from Exodus chapter 34, verses 5 through 7, when you know God passes in front of him and he's passing in front of him, he's proclaiming the Lord, the God, compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love, faithfulness from generation to generation. That kind of gets repeated. So God is slow to anger. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that God does not get angry. It just means it takes God a long time to get angry. So here's my positive example. Years later, and it's just so interesting. I can remember this sermon. Abby was little. Was she the only, she might have been the only one we had at that time. I can't remember. Anyway, Abby's was little. The sermon at church was about anger, of all things. And we go to McDonald's after church. And we realize after Abby had eaten at least one, maybe two chicken nuggets, that these things were raw. And I felt that, like, I'm going to go up there and make somebody's day feeling. And then I remembered, is this the character of Christ in you? And I didn't say a word. Actually, I think Barbara went up there and she made their day. I'm just kidding. She wouldn't hurt a fly. Proverbs 28:25, next one. The greedy stirs up conflict, but those who trust in the Lord will prosper. I'm going to give you a literal interpretation of this verse. A literal interpretation is this. A person with a large appetite stirs up conflict, but those who trust the Lord will be made fat. That's what it says. So the source of the conflict is greed. Now listen, this is not just greed about money. This is just about having an insatiable appetite for anything. You know, if we have an insatiable appetite to be right all the time, to be recognized all the time, to tell the best story all the time, that's greed. And that will lead to conflict. Young people, listen. I know this from experience. For those of you that are navigating through middle school and high school and you're learning about friends and developing friendships and true friendships, listen to these statements. If you have an insatiable desire to be the one all the time, conflict will happen. But the solution to this proverb tells us it's trusting in the Lord. And those who trust in the Lord, they're going to get fat. They're going to get what the greedy person wanted. But I think the contrast here really is about covetousness and contentment. Right? Greed is uncontrolled covetousness. The opposite of greed is trusting God. It's about contentment, being happy with what He has given you, being happy with what He provides. And so the opposite is about, it's not about finding security in getting more or having more or doing more. It's about finding security in what God is doing. So greed, or always having to be the best, have the most, do the most, it's going to cause conflict. But if you want to prosper, if you want the things, the relationships, then you have to be content with where God has you. The final two verses we're going to look at, I think they kind of blend several of these characteristics and then contrast with kind of one solution. Proverbs 29, verses 22 through 23. And we've talked about a couple of these already. An angry person stirs up conflict. A hot-tempered person commits many sins. Pride brings a person low, but the lowly in spirit gain honor. Now, this is really what I call the conflict here. The source of conflict is like the trifecta. When you add anger, a temper, and pride all together, you're guaranteed to have an explosion. I can speak from experience. Now, this is a different word. Pride is a different word from chapter 13, verse 10. This word, pride, is related to our English word, pride, arrogance. Thinking more highly of oneself than is warranted. That's what pride is all about. You think only about you. It's self-centeredness. And what happens when we become self-centered, we are blinded to the value of other people. So naturally, when people feel like they're looked down on or they feel less than, it leads to conflict. Unfortunately, I believe that self-centeredness is something that we are conditioned to be from birth. It's part of that fall that has been ingrained into every single one of us. If we're honest about it, every single one of us at moments in our life can identify times that we have been self-centered. And if you're sitting there thinking, okay, probably not me, ask your mom. When you were a baby, trust me, you were self-centered. When it was time to eat, you didn't care about anything else other than eating. But the solution to this kind of pride, this arrogance, this self-centeredness, Solomon tells us, it's actually humility. The lowly in spirit gain honor. So if pride is thinking only of oneself, listen, this is important. This is how I would define humility. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. And there's a huge difference. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but it's thinking of yourself less. And the reason that humility is a solution to conflict is because it puts us in the posture of trying to think of the other person's perspective. It removes from us the desire to be consumed by our own needs and wants, and it gives us the opportunity to consider what other people may need, what other people may want. Pride closes the door on compromise, but humility is the door to compromise. And that's what this proverb is telling us. You know, if you want to experience conflict in your life, only think about yourself ever. It's a guaranteed way to have conflict. If you want to minimize the damage of conflict, if you want to reduce the amount of conflict in your life, consider other people. Consider their feelings. Consider their perspectives, their experiences. Now I want to end with a couple verses from chapter 26. Because I think they're so fascinating and they really help us kind of wrap our minds around all that we've talked about in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 26, verses 4 through 5. Now pay attention to this really carefully. Because when I read it, I scratched my head. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. All right. Which one are we supposed to do? Do not answer a fool. Wait. Answer a fool. But I think these verses highlight something that is so important. Not only when we're addressing conflict, but when we're thinking about these proverbs in particular. Think about this series. Remember, these proverbs are not promises. This is not a guarantee that if you do this, this will happen. It's not a guarantee. It's not a promise. It's not about a prophecy. It's like a probability. If you do these, if you apply these principles to your life, it is likely that this will be the outcome. Not a guaranteed outcome, not always the case. It's probable. But especially when you think about conflict, each situation is going to be different. Each response may need to be different. And so here's kind of where we come to. When we get to this proverb, don't answer a fool. Oh, wait, answer a fool. If we want to experience the good life, I think this is like the, you know, if I were going to put in like the keystone of this series, this is the keystone. This is what everything hinges on in this book. If we want to experience the good life, we have to desire discernment. We have to desire discernment. Charles Spurgeon said this: discernment is not a matter of simply telling the difference between right and wrong. Rather, it is telling the difference between right and almost right. Let's pray. Father, we know that your desire for us is a good life, an abundant life. That's what you tell us in John. That Jesus came to give us life and to give us life abundantly, to the full, a good life. You've given us principles to apply to our life that leads us down that wise path and helps us to avoid the path of folly. Not only have you given us these words as guides to live by, but you allow us to have experiences in life that mold us, shape us, and form us. But ultimately, you've given us the choice to choose. Will we allow you to shape us and conform us to the image of Christ? Or will we seek out to determine our own image, our own likeness? Your path leads to life. The other path leads to destruction. Father, help us to be truly wise people, seeking you in all that we do. Give us discernment. Give us the desire to be just like Jesus. It's in his name I pray. Amen. As the worship team comes forward, I'm just going to remind you, this is a great time to reflect, not just about what you've heard me say, but reflect on specifically the Proverbs, the verses. That's God speaking to you. And ask God to reveal to you pieces and parts in your life that maybe need to be shaped, refined, or maybe, like myself and others, you're experiencing some kind of conflict in your life. One of the things that God desires to do, not just challenge us and change us, but he also desires to comfort us. And maybe this is a moment that God can bring some comfort to your life this morning.